The format for this meeting is a 10-minute speaker, our secretary's announcements, a coffee and snack break, and then our main speaker. Our first speaker for tonight is Patrick.
Hi, my name is Patrick. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict, codependent, and everything. Yeah, thank you. I'm supposed to tell you what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now in 10 minutes. I don't think I can do that. Basically, what I'm going to do right now is basically talk to, I know we had a few newcomers. Some of you that know me, I started trying, not for myself, but for family members, jobs, and other people like that to try to get sober back in 1992. And today I got 20 months and 7 days, I believe, if I'm correct. Because this time I did it for me. I figured out that the selfishness and self-centeredness in Alcoholics Anonymous that we're not supposed to have, I keep the selfishness as in I'm selfish as keeping myself sober, and then I go along to the next and try to talk to other people. My alcoholism took me to places, namely the last one I was in, before I started coming here and made this my home group, which was Metropolitan State Hospital, where I was there for 17 months, 9 days. And I've heard... I get to go back there and talk on panels now. Anyway, I listen to a lot of, people come in there and say that, you know, their war stories and how they did this, you know, how they tried to get sober and they went into 11 different mental institutions and all rehabs and they didn't get sober till they found Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that is right for them. Now, for me, I had some very deep personal problems that did not cause my drinking, had some sort of effect, but like the alcohol is not the problem, it's actually myself, because now it is a disease that I realized it. And I talked to my sponsor about this, and if anybody knows this question, let me know at the break. We're reading through the book, and it says that alcohol is known as a disease. And I like to read a lot, and I was reading an Edgar Allan Poe story called The Black Cat. It was written back in 18-something, and he was talking about after he killed his wife and stuff, and he had this disease, and he goes, and he, exactly quoting from this, which is weird, is what disease is worse than alcoholism? I really can't think of one. But basically, I found, I knew Alcohol Anonymous worked if you wanted it to. I never wanted it to work enough. I wanted to get sober for everybody except myself. And the alcohol I used basically to cover feelings that I didn't want to deal with. You know, my dad committed suicide on Labor Day of 1986, which when I finally got in the hospital and dealt with all this, I figured out, you know, I worked this problem out. I can go on with my life now. I had to go through that. Detoxes are fantastic if that's what you're in. Personally, with me, if you stick me in some place like a hospital, like especially my second home, which used to be Harvard-UCLA Medical Center, after a couple weeks, and you're fine again, you want to get out. I went in there a couple times on different suicide attempts, and they told me, well, you have a drinking problem. I go, well, I know that, but I have other problems besides that. And, you know, I know I have a drinking problem. I slit my wrist, overdose on my seizure meds. I do take medication, by the way, so, but I don't abuse it. I take it for reasons of my that my alcohol and drug abuse caused. And, if I hadn't been stuck in that place, because they do have a lot of you that go to, I'm sure there's quite a few of you here that do go speak at panels at Metro, and they have a detox program there, which is Cider House. And if I would have been stuck there instead of in the hospital itself, I wouldn't be up here talking to you tonight, because I'm 100% positive that I would be dead. I would not be here talking to you. I wouldn't be making your guys coffee every Saturday night. I wouldn't be doing a lot of shit that I really don't want to do. This right now especially. But anyways, I actually got the really opportunity to go back on Thursday night to the unit, the last unit I was on, and speak on the panel. The guy that used to come, like, I think the second or third Thursday of each month, and I got to speak on that panel and tell these people that were in there that it works, I'm out, I'm living proof. I used to live in my car at the South Bay Alana Club back in 92, and I know there's a few people that know that because you know me from there, and I kind of half-assed played it like I was sober, had a job, shit, you know, sober for my boss, sober for my daughter, sober for my mom, sober. But I never really was completely, really wanted it. And then when I got in this place and they locked me up, I wanted back out because I'm going, my Jared check's going to be coming in 2 weeks, I'm going to get out and start drinking because that vicious, insane cycle starts. And finally I gave in, and I don't know, spiritual awakenings, people have all kinds of ones. Mine was like about 8 months I was in the hospital, and I could go on passes with my family members. I couldn't really go anywhere by myself. They do have units that you, one that you could, or two that you could go out on daily passes. And I never dealt drugs when I was in high school, but in there I dealt coffee because it is contraband, and that's like the only stim you can get. So, you know, I'd make, you know, some pretty good money selling the stuff. So anyways, a friend I was talking to on a Saturday back in 95, in July, said that, me and so-and-so drank some Jack Daniels last week, you know, because he gets, you know, the gets to go on the day passes. I go, well, my birthday's next week, and I'm going to be 30. And he goes, well, you should drink. I go, I don't know, because, you know, I might start reeking. I don't know how it comes out of your pores, but I started thinking, well, shit, you got to drink a lot until it starts sweating out a few days later. And so I'm sitting there contemplating this, going, well, if I get caught, their rules are pretty lax. They'll keep you. They'll pull your grounds passes because they have the opportunity up there to get you for a state hospital. It's really good. It's if you ever have the opportunity to go into a mental facility and you really do want help, don't go for the ones that want your insurance. Go for the ones that do want to help you, because actually that's why I'm here and I'm alive right now. They helped me. They kept me there because they knew that besides my mental illness, I did have a drinking problem and substance abuse problem. I'm thinking, well, shit, you know, I could sneak it in. They never search me for my coffee, and I make $35 off a little tiny jar like this each Monday. So my only problem with that was, well, if I get caught, the only thing that's going to happen is I'll get my grounds pulled for a week, but I'll get to keep my job, and it's a minimum wage job, which isn't taxed. Okay, and I thought, but all of a sudden, this never happened to me before, because my drinking, everything revolved around my drinking, that I'll take care of this problem the next day, the same old bullshit story. You guys all heard of this a million times before. It's like, but if I don't get caught, I can do this every Saturday. And it was, and then that was like basically my spiritual awakening. And they have AA there, and I totally got into going to AA meetings. And my mom has a like forever lifetime restraining order on me. But since I'm sober now, I'm able to go there on the weekends. She had me house sit for her a couple weeks back. She trusts me. I get to see my daughter now. I am separated, you know, and I get to see her. I get to see my grandparents. I took them. A lot of things happen, and I always sat there when I was still in the hospital going, well, this is a pretty good deal because I can go out and take off and shit and make money, get paid, go shop, and come back because it's a safe place, and you get in that safe environment. And they finally started giving me passes on the last unit I was on, and I never fucking realized how many goddamn liquor stores there was on every corner, because I always walked to the closest one, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. And they're like in Norwalk, everywhere, and I'm like, the first one I got, there's a good Mexican restaurant right down the street. Well, that Mexican restaurant's next to a liquor store. I'm going like, fuck, okay, here comes the test. Now, I got a half a minute, cool. Anyways, I'm sober. Anyways, so I started coming to this meeting, and when I used to go to the South Bay Lawn Club, which I was a member at one time, I always thought that was a huge ass fucking man. I go, this place is big, man. But I look around here, I'm going like, fuck. Because there's a lot of people in here. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing that I know for sure is that, that I can tell you for the newcomers is that ask some of these people, if they'd ask you if they know me, that I'm going to live in my car. I don't drive anymore, but, you know. I actually do get money now from jobs I had. I actually do pay rent. I actually am able to buy my own clothes and things like that, and I don't have to play games, and I never panhandle. I don't got to do any of that shit anymore. I get to come here and help other people. I got people calling me now wanting help from me. I get to go speak at Atascadero in December, which is, I'm kind of going, fuck, you know, that's kind of scary. But this program works, and they say, well, it's not a guaranteed. It's not guaranteed. Well, I agree with that. It's not 100% guaranteed, but I think, and it's my opinion, that it is guaranteed if you want it to work. I never wanted it enough, not 100%, for it to work for me. And things get better. They do change, or they get, you know, they slowly get better after time. All I can tell you is, you know, get a sponsor, keep coming back, work your steps, just do it. Things change slowly. It may take a long time. Things might not be rosy. I'm having a problem tonight. When I got here, I was sick last week. Before I came back tonight, I was getting argument with somebody here. I'm going to try to work it out later. But anyways, I want to thank Becky for asking me. Well, actually, I don't want to thank Becky for asking me. But I feel a lot better. And, you know, if any newcomers who want to talk, you know, like I said, it works. I'm here. And I'm sober. I shouldn't be. And, you know, keep coming back. Thank you very much.
Now our main speaker will share her experience, strength, and help with us. Please join me in welcoming Debbie H. from Long Beach.
Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie Harris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi. It's nice to be here tonight, and I'd like to thank Mike for inviting me. This is a meeting that reminds me of my home groups that I've had. I've had three in my sobriety because it's full of energy and enthusiasm. And those are the kind of people I like hanging around with and groups I like being a part of. And it's really a treat to be here tonight. And I'd like to welcome you if you are new. And I hope that if you are new or returning to Alcoholics Anonymous that you'll try it our way. Because I know... Because I know that the path that was read in chapter 5, there's only one path, there's no S on that word, and that's the 12 steps, is the one that's been successful for me, because I've tried to create my own a few times, and I have not been able to stay sober. But by trying this path, I've been able to stay sober for a period of time, and I wasn't able to do that before. And there's three things about me I always like to tell you first, because these are the three most important things in my life. And that is, first of all, sobriety date. My sobriety date is February the 8th, 1976, which means I've been sober a little over 20 years. That is not my first sobriety date, but it is my last one.
Yeah.
And, I love it. I love it. You're listening. All right. But I'll tell you, it will be my last one if I continue to do the things that I do on a daily basis. Because I do what you've shown me, I've done what you've told me, and I do what's in our book. And that's not my first sobriety date, but I've learned that it can be my last. And I believe very strongly in a sobriety date. That's where I begin. Physical sobriety is where... With physical sobriety, that's where everything else about Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in my life. And I believe very strongly in physical sobriety. I also know for myself that's not where it ends. Because I used to think all I have to do is not drink and everything's just going to be wonderful. And I used to think all I have to do is just go to meetings and not drink and everything's just going to be fine. And it wasn't, because in both cases I drank again. I know that I need to do a series of things here, take the actions that have been listed in Chapter 5 and throughout our book, and follow the examples of the successful sober people ahead of me if I want to stay sober. And I do. I do want to stay sober. And I do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous because I want to stay sober, whether I feel like it or not, whether I want to or not. That's not really any question. I do it because I want to stay sober. And But I believe in physical sobriety, and that makes everything else happen to me. And if you are new here tonight and don't have a sobriety date, I encourage you to get one, because Alcoholics Anonymous will make a lot more sense when you're sober. And to me, sobriety is the absence of everything, because the last thing I ever took was I smoked one lousy joint, and that's what my sobriety date is based on. Second and third thing are equally important to me, and that is a home group. I'm a member of the Bellflower Big Book Group and have been for almost 10 years. And I go to anywhere from 4 to 7 meetings a week. It just depends upon what the calendar is. Prior to that, I was a member of the Skyland Group in Atlanta, Georgia, which I had the privilege of being at about a week ago. And back on a trip there, and it was wonderful to see my old sponsor and be at my old home group again. And prior to that, I was a member of the 12 and 12 group in Minneapolis for almost 4 years. And I believe very strongly in a home group, because I've learned how to do everything I need to know how to do out there in rooms like this. Because I came to you with a completely blank slate. I didn't know anything about courtesies to others, whether it be in a meeting or on the freeway. I didn't know anything about having a little kindness and compassion that would not directly benefit me. I didn't know about being of service to anyone but me. I didn't know how to be accountable and to show up and to do what I say I'm going to do. I didn't know how to be a part of my family, which today I am. You've shown me how to be a good employee. I did really like it when you show up, you know. You've shown me here how to be a friend and not just use people as I need them. You've shown me here how to do a lot of things, how to be one among many, how to have little jobs in my meetings. You've shown me here how to get married, and of course you've also shown me here how to get unmarried, you know. So you just never know what's going to be revealed, you know. And but all of it, you've shown me how to be sober, top of the list, and the toughies with a little bit of dignity and grace. You've shown me how to act better than I feel. You've shown me how to act better than I think. Because you don't care what I think or feel, but you sure do care what I do. And it doesn't matter whether I had good intentions. All you know is what I've done. And my actions are what keep me sober, not how I think or not how I feel. And the third thing is very important to me, and that is the sponsor. I've had 3 sponsors in sobriety because I've lived in 3 different states, and I prefer local sponsorship. And I believe very strongly in it because I need that one person who I will completely reveal myself to. Good, bad, left and right, round and circle, square. And I need that one person in my life because I do believe that my secrets keep me sick, and I can't afford secrets, and I just don't want to put myself in jeopardy by having any. And I don't have to. And I've had sponsors, all mine sponsors still are busier than me today. And they've all had a number of things alike. They've all been sober quite a bit longer than me, which is what I was looking for. Somebody who'd been living this way of life for a good period of time. They have all been activists in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not people who sit around and go to one, you know, meeting a week and tell me to go to meetings. They're in those meetings they tell me to go to. They have all been more active than I. And also probably, though, at the top of the list is these are people that I want to be like when I grow up. I want to be just like them. And I can be if I do what they do. I can have what they have if I do what they do. And there aren't any shortcuts. I've tried them. There aren't any. And so I believe very strongly in those 3. So if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, or perhaps you've been sitting here a while and you're a little restless, irritable, and discontent, and you don't have one or all 3 of these things active in your life, a sobriety date, a home group, and a sponsor, I hope that you will do what I would consider the greatest gift you can give yourself, and that is get them and activate them. Not a sponsor you call twice a year to let them know you're alive, or a home group you show up when it's convenient. But that's the difference between what made me, how I got to stay sober for a period of time and why I didn't. The very fact that I did things differently instead of running my own life. And so I hope that you will try it this way, because if you're an alcoholic, we have a solution for you. And this has, in my 20 years, been the most successful I've seen. It's not the only way, but it sure has been the most successful. I see happier people staying sober by this path and doing what we do than I've seen any other thing tried. You might want to do it alone, but sure not as fun. And I just want you to know that you don't have to. You don't have to be feeling that you're feeling inside anymore if you don't want to. Because here we offer you a solution like no other place. So I welcome you and hope you'll stay with us. My first drink was on a Friday night, a Friday the 13th. Fridays became my favorite night of the week from then on, and still are today. That's why I liked yesterday a lot. It was in April of 1970, and I took my first drink when I was 12 years old. And as of today, I am 39, so we'll get all the numbers out of the way. I'm celebrating my birthday with you here tonight, and I can't think of a better place I'd rather be than in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I very non-humbly say that it's my birthday, of course, but the point being is that I would not see a birthday if it wasn't for you. There'd be no birthdays. Long time ago, there wouldn't have been any birthdays, because I never expected to see 30, and I didn't care. I remember very clearly at 17 years old sitting in my car with a bottle of whiskey straight up, going down thinking just as clear as my mind is right now, I'll never see 30, but who cares? I'm going out with a party. And that was my attitude. And because of you, I've gotten to see 9 years beyond that death date. I took that first drink because I wanted to be accepted by this little group of people that invited me. They were the cool kids in school. And when I arrived at that party that night on April the 13th, 1970, I did not know that this night would literally change the course of my life. I didn't know that. Because I arrived because I wanted to be a part of that group, and I heard them talk about drinking. I made a very conscious decision before I arrived that I'm going to get drunk. Now, I don't know how you do it. I figure you probably have to drink a whole bunch. I don't know. I've never seen anybody drunk before. I'm going to be the first person I see drunk. But that looked to be the most assured way that I can be a part of this group. So that was my plan. But that little girl that was 12 years old that didn't need to take that first drink, I simply wanted to be accepted by that group. I was raised in the Midwest in a very kind, comfortable home. I've never seen violence. I've never had abuse of any kind. I've never known what it's like to be hungry or without a home or without income or in a disadvantaged situation. I lived a very sheltered life. I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I didn't come here with any problems or hang-ups. I had a very loving God when I came here. There was no reason for me to take that first drink except that I wanted to be a part of these people. And I don't know where I deducted drunk to be the best, because I've never seen it. My parents are really what I learned here was called social drinkers. I've never done it, but that's what they're called. And when I started that night, I just knew I liked what was happening. We got that bottle started going around. And all I knew was I wanted to get started, and it got to me, and I kind of had seen what other people were doing, so I did the same thing. I took a pull off it, and I sent it to the next guy. And as that's going down, it's burning my throat, and I'm thinking, I think this is a good sign. You know, something was happening. There was some kind of a physical thing I could sense. But I wasn't ready for the next thing, because when it hit bottom for me, it was like, it was like hot velvet. It just went down there and it went to work. And it warmed me up and it filled in all those cracks and crevices I didn't even know existed. And it began to cool down those hot rocks in my gut I didn't even know I had. And I've got this about dead center behind my belly button, and there's just this warm glow, and I'm thinking, you know, oatmeal never did this. and I really like this. And I believe that what makes me an alcoholic is what happened when I took my second drink. Now, I'm not an alcoholic in my mind because I drank too much. What's too much? What's too much for one is not enough for the next guy. I don't believe I'm an alcoholic because of the length of time I did or did not drink. There aren't measurements like that in any of our literature that I have come across. There are other kinds of measurements. The things that happen on the inside, the things that happen in my mind, and the changes that happen in my personality when I take a drink and when I don't take a drink. Sometimes for me that was the Mr. Hyde, was the not drinking part at the end. But I don't know any of that, of course, but I do know what happened to me. There's a statement in the doctor's opinion that perfectly describes what happened to me, and I wouldn't have known it if you'd have pointed it right out and said, this is exactly what happened. I did not hear it or see it until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this last time. And he says that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Doesn't say ice cream or shopping or moving. It says alcohol. And I have a different reaction. When I take a drink, what happens to me has never, ever happened to my parents or my grandmother. Yet, because this is my first experience, I am assuming it happens to everybody. And when that second drink, that bottle came around that second time, and I did the same thing I did the first time. I took a pull and I sent it to the next guy. I had remembered feeling very anxious and very scared, and God, I hope everything's going to be okay tonight, and I hope I'm accepted by this group of people, and God, I hope I wore the right thing. You know, I'm just terribly nervous about being accepted by them. And by the time that hit bottom, that anxiety turned into arrogance. And it was sort of as if I rose up within myself. I sort of started to take a look around the room. And I thought, now, hey, aren't they glad I'm here? You know, it just was such an incredible change that I loved what alcohol was doing for me. Because nobody and nothing had ever had this effect on me, and it would become so natural to me, just like it had been breathing. Just like I have done this a long time. It would become instinctive without any role models in front of me what to do. I got drunk that night. I drank as fast as I could, whatever was there. I would have my first blackout, and I thought I was just forgetting stuff. I passed out, and I thought I must have just napped. I went drug home from the party I came to, and I've got my first case of the dry heaves, of which it must have been something I ate that morning. I don't understand what this is. And a lot of things would happen to me that night. First of all, I couldn't wait to do it again. Secondly, I did not relate these problems to drinking. And I would never, ever, in the next 6 years, blame alcohol for anything I would ever do, get in trouble, whether it be with friends or parents or authority or police or jobs or anything. It would never, ever get blamed, alcohol and the drugs that would follow. It's always going to be somebody else I can kind of tack it onto in my own rationalizing mind. And that night, I know that for myself, when I took that first drink, as I've looked at this a lot of times, several things, I think, to me happened. When I took that first drink, I activated that mental obsession because I'm not going to be thinking about anything for the next 6 years except that. How to get it, and when I've got it, all the fun I had last time I had it, and how I'm going to get more. And it's just a never-ending cycle about thinking about the drama of all this going on. And all the priorities and things that I had in my mind, it had been important to me to be a good student and a good daughter and obey the rules. Those kinds of things would be totally forgotten, completely unimportant. I also feel that I activated that when I take that first drink, I have never tried to control my drinking because I've never been in control of it. I never wanted to try to control it. I loved where it took me. That was part of the enchantment of drinking to me, was you never know where you'd end up, how or with who. You know, it was just part of the excitement. And it didn't bother me. I think I know I'm so grateful that I did drink in a small community where everybody knew everybody. I would have been in big trouble in a major city. And so this was how my drinking started. I couldn't wait to do it again. And at 12 years old, I created every opportunity I could. It mostly was limited to weekends, but anything I could do, I would do. And again, I never questioned anything. I never questioned what I took or drank or did. And I would never give anything a second thought for what I did or was going to do. I just did it. About a year later, I'm 13, and I'm introduced to the wonderful world of drugs, which allowed me to stay sober, or conscious, I should say, longer before the inevitable blackout. I'm a blackout drinker because I drink whiskey out of a bottle with a beer chaser. I'm not interested in fruit and umbrellas and all that crap, you know? I'm still not. I still don't like ice. I have a tiny problem, though, and I tend to black out too quickly, and I don't want to be sleeping through life. I want to be in the middle of the action going on, so I find little helpers like speed and acid to help keep me awake, and they become my new companions, too. And so that becomes my way of life, and on a regular basis, and especially towards the end, last year and a half, on a daily basis, my kind of day or diet was a bottle of whiskey and a hit or two of acid. And that's the way that I lived. I had moved into that. It was as natural to me as taking vitamins in the morning. I didn't think anything of it. Well, the way I was living my life suited me, but it didn't quite suit my father. And so he had tried all human power to relieve me of my alcoholism, and when he finally surrendered in his own way, he sought professional advice. He did not know what to do, and believe me, I think he did try most everything. And they said, while you still have legal custody, you need to put her away. And so they sent me to a treatment center. That was what was recommended to them. And I went to this hospital in Grand Forks, North Dakota at this time. And I would be there. I got there on a Friday. Lots of things happened to me on Fridays. I took my first drink on a Friday, and I was introduced to you on a Friday. And I would be in this hospital for a total of 7 weeks and educated and instructed about this thing called alcoholism and the Abstinence and Alcoholics Anonymous and what we do here. And it was really such a foreign language to me. I really didn't understand what you were talking about, and more importantly, I wasn't one. So, you know, it's okay. I don't need to get it. We would be taken to outside meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on Friday nights, and, you know, since I'm not an alcoholic, I don't really need to sit up front and listen. So I would find the farthest back part of the room and distract myself. Well, every now and then I would tune into what people were doing, which is just what I'm doing, sharing their story and experience strength and hope. And I would tune in, and I would hear things, and I'd rationalize why my case is different. But the problem was, in my own small way, I'm starting to kind of remotely, of course, identify with these people, because you don't want to identify because you might be one. And you need to keep it very different. And so I would hear them say things like they had lost their family because of drinking. And I looked at that and I thought, hey, that's a good deal. You know, I wanted to get rid of my family. They were a constant source of irritation to me. Good deal. And yet, I knew it had been necessary down here for me to leave their home because they no longer had a safe place to come home to. I heard them talk about totaling out cars. And I do drink and drive, and I've never totaled out a car, you know, not officially. I did come here with a little drunk car, you know, the kind that when you bought it, it was square, and then it gets kind of rounded out with the drunk bumps, and things are missing, and the window had been shot out, and I mean, it was a pitiful little mess when it got here, but I'd never
I'd never, on paper, totaled out a car. So that was different. They, of course, talked about drunk driving, and as I've just explained, I do that. And the reason I never had any drunk driving charges is because I worked for the city judge. And so in the small town, you know all the police, and they know you, and so they take away your booze, and they tell you to go home. And they talked about jails and prisons and institutions they had been in. And, I mean, you know, you don't have to look around these rooms too hard to see that there are some serious criminals in these rooms. And, hey, it does not apply to me because I have only been in jail 3 times and each time was a misunderstanding. So let's not confuse the two. They talked about losing jobs. And I realized after some length of sobriety, the reason I had a series of jobs was because I was losing a series of jobs. I always had a few happening because you needed to do what I was doing. But I had, I'd been fired from a few and I'd been asked to quit from a few. But I had developed a very bad habit, and I used to quit in blackouts. Well, when you show up the next day, it's a surprise to both you and them, you know. What do you say, huh? And so these are the kinds of things that I could rationalize away why my case is different. But there were two things y'all talked about that were not different and that really bothered me. And one of them was you talked about all those broken promises. And that went right to the heart on me because it wasn't so much that there were so many broken, it's just that there weren't any kept. Because all was part of my father's request and promise that he would try to extract from me was in be good, which meant don't drink and take drugs, and that was an impossibility. And we both knew it, and we both would play the little dance of making promises. And if I could have shown the sincerity, I would have given him a finger of mine, you know, cut off a finger to show him how sincere I mean it. I'll really try to do good. But we both knew that that was impossible. And the other thing was there was a woman who talked about trying to scrub away the smell. I'd heard lots of things, lots of threats, lots of predictions. But this one was the one that frightened me. Because I'd had this funny odor for quite some time, of which I did not know what it was. And I told you before, I've never blamed alcohol for anything that would happen. And I didn't know what this funny odor was. And she said that this smell she was trying to scrub away, of which I had done many, many times, was booze coming through her pores. And the thing that frightened me the most is that I knew that she knew what that smell smelled like. And she said she was an alcoholic. And she didn't drink anymore. And I thought, well, my God, I can't do that. I can't do that. But it was as close to making any kind of momentary, maybe I am one that I had ever been to at. And so you just try and forget that stuff because it's just too close to home. And, excuse me, I was sent to an all-women's halfway house, and I got there on a Friday. And I'd be there 9 months. In my first 7 months, I did the barest of bare minimums to stay there, and that was not drink or take any drugs, which, you know, in a halfway house, that's kind of a no-brainer, and to go to at least one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting a month. Okay, I can do that. I'll do it, because I want to keep these people off my back, and I knew that was the whole reason I was going, was to keep the heat off, because I did not think I was an alcoholic. I heard them talk about it quit working. It still worked. The way I believed it, it still worked. And I just want to kind of get these people to forget about me so I can then, when I leave here, go off and drift into that drinking sunset one more time, because that's where I was headed. I would come to California, Northern California, visit my mother for a holiday, In the first week, I'm absolutely miserable because I'm naturally I'm hanging around with the people I used to drink with, and last week and a half, I'm drunk with them. I'm drunk and I'm doing drugs. I'm trying to do everything I used to do to make it work just like it used to, and something was terribly wrong. And when I would come out of those blackouts, I'd think to myself, you know, it's got to be California. You know, it's the drugs here. It's the booze here. It's different. If only, if only, if only. And there weren't any, and I knew it. I'd been to too many Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Believe me, it will ruin your drinking. Guarantee, we will never, you will never get rid of us. Once you've been here, you will never, ever forget us. You may not join us, but you will never forget us. And I heard them talk about in these meetings it quit working. And it was the first time I realized this isn't doing what it used to do, what I counted on it to do. It's not doing it anymore. And and I came much closer to, perhaps I really am an alcoholic, but I'm not at the admitting point. And I returned back to Minneapolis, and I stepped my meetings up from one a month to one a week. That sounded like a lot of meetings to me, and I'm not interested in a sponsor. I've already done steps 1 through 5. Thank you very much. You know, who knows about 7, 6 through 12, and or any commitments and things like that. I mean, of course they said it, but I've got, you know, I'm too full of myself. And 5 weeks later, on a Friday night, I got a letter in the mail that had one joint in it, and like any still uncommitted or unconfirmed alcoholic, I decided to keep it. I thought, you know, you just never know when you might need something like this. It seemed right and rational. And, of course, you know, it was just amazing. I needed it the next day. It was, I don't know, quite a surprise. Of course, I didn't think about anything else but that stupid joint, of course, but that was the 7th of February, and I take my sobriety date on the 8th, the beginning of a new way of life for me. And that one lousy joint did for me what nobody and nothing else could. It threw me off the fence of indecision and reservation. I didn't know I was still sitting on. It was the first time I knew deep down there was a surrender and that I was willing to do whatever you wanted me to do. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Because my life as it is today is going nowhere, and it's going to continue to go nowhere. And it's purposeless. And I don't want to keep living if this is the way it's going to be. And I went to the Old Timers of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I asked them, what do you do to stay sober? And they knew that all the cuteness and all the questions and all the rationale was gone out of me, and they knew I meant business. And they said, what we do is one day at a time. We don't take the first drink or anything else that affects us from the neck up. Or regular meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, we get a sponsor and a guide of our understanding. We take these steps, we practice their principles, and we apply the traditions in our life. We try to be of service to others and carry this message. And I have always, the solution, in my opinion, is the exact same as it was 20 years ago. It's still the same to me today, and it's the same thing I tell new people when they ask me that question. What do you do to stay sober? I know that it's been successful for over 20 years. And I have always been a regular meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've always not taken the first drink or anything else that affects me from the neck up. The rest of those things have been my life most of the time. I have certainly had periods of self-will, and it does run riot from anywhere from 5 minutes to seemingly 2 years to sort of running my own life. I have done all kinds of things in the last 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, right and wrong, legal, illegal, moral, immoral, square, circle, doesn't matter. But I do know that even though it does not excuse my behavior or wrong behaviors, and the hurts that I've perhaps caused, I do know that I have a way of life today that I don't have to keep living that, and I can make the correction. I can make that restitution or make that amend, and I can set the record straight. So for a long time, I've been living with a very clean heart, clean conscience, and at peace. And that was one of the things that I was asked, what do you want from this program? And one of the things was peace. And I've been able to have that for a long time. And I, my first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very active. I was in a meeting every single night. And very active in service and working with a sponsor. And I was just shy of my fourth birthday when I moved to Atlanta. And I had asked a man to be my sponsor, who I had dinner with just short a while ago, and who was and still is 27 years sober, longer than I am, and the most active member in that area I know. And I asked him to be my sponsor. He agreed. I made my home group his, or his home group mine, Skyland, and it met twice a week. And I guess I thought at 4 years of sobriety I knew something, and so I made a decision to start going just, you know, two or three meetings a week, you know, because I'm new in this area. And I'll just kind of acclimate myself in easy. And let me just sideway for a minute. I hope that you won't follow that idea, because I hope that, remember, you are new in a new area. And 90 and 90 is a lot better than what I was doing. Because not that I had a plan for what I was going to do when I got acclimated, but I was going to start getting balance in my life. But let me tell you, in my case, I darn near balanced me out of here. Balance works when I'm a little bit more on the AA side than the other, because this is my medicine. This is where I always get well, even if I don't know I'm kind of on the sick side. And so what happened is I made this decision. I didn't kind of run it by a sponsor, because, you know, I'm 4 years sober now. I know what's going on. And what happened, though, is I get this mentality of, see, two or three meetings a week becomes two. It doesn't jump to four. It becomes two. And I sort of get this number locked in, and that's it. And what happens, though, is a day at a time I start shaving it down. Instead of getting an hour before the meeting, I'm getting there about 45 minutes before the home group meeting. And I'm leaving. Instead of being one of the last people to leave, like I have always been at my home group meetings in Minneapolis and here, and it's getting shorter and shorter, to the point where it's sort of like, amen, shake, shake, and you're looking at taillights. I'm getting there now, just a few minutes before the meeting starts, get my coffee and sit down. Meeting's going to start. You don't get a lot of fellowshipping going on during that time. Oh, sure, I have a commitment, but it's during the meeting, you know, so I don't have to get there too early or stay too late. But, yeah, I have a commitment. I'm doing everything they tell me to do. Hey. And when I take that attitude, I am in serious trouble. There are red flags all over me. But I am have moved into self-will to the point where I've convinced myself that I'm doing this. I'm 6 years sober, and I am a nutcase, let me tell you. I am very restless, irritable, and discontent. And I don't know why, because in my mind, I'm doing everything you told me to do. But you see, I've started treating Alcoholics Anonymous like some kind of class. Punch in, punch out. I got that done. Got that obligation done for this week. And I just know that I, from that experience of, I can't take my life so nonchalantly. This is a way of life for me. I have a great debt here. And may I never forget that those old-timers didn't dodge in 2 minutes before the meeting and leave immediately afterwards when I started coming around here. They showed me the example that you stay. You stay and you do. And so I'm 6 years sober, and I don't know the solution is getting back into that, because, you know, I'm not asking anyone. I'm just going to find the solution myself. And about 3 weeks later, I did, and I met him. And that's what I thought was the solution. And I met this little fellow, and it was on a Friday night. Hey, it's an omen. Poor little fellow, he didn't know what hit him. And I looked at all the things, and I thought, this is great. It's Friday night. He's single. Hadn't always mattered, but it's good. He's got plenty of money, which is important because I like to go places. And he's sober 13 years. Now, he hadn't been to a meeting in 3 years, but hey, no problem. I go to meetings, I hip him. So I started to hip this little fellow, whether he needed it or not and wanted it or not. Of course, he didn't want it, but I was bound and determined to make things the way I wanted them to be. And it was the dance of death for the next 3 months. And I had a lot of crazy thinking, but the one thing that I did not stop doing was going to meetings. I didn't want to be there. I hated going.
But I went because I knew deep down the minute I made the first excuse not to go to the meeting, there will be no debate for my second excuse. And I am drunk. I knew that. I knew the very fine tether that I was on. I knew that. So I went, but I didn't want to be there. And I finally, after 3 months of this whirlwind romance of which I was the only one involved, God had thrown a lot of roadblocks in front of me, but of course they've been misplaced. So I would go around or knock them down. And finally he threw one in there that I acknowledged, and the guy got married to somebody else. And I know. I was a good sport though, and I let him go. And found another little fella, did the very same thing, danced a dance for 3 months, watched him walk down the aisle with somebody else. And finally, mercifully, I think God said, okay, I think we've had enough here. And I made one more major surrender. I just bottomed out emotionally at about 6 years and 8 months. And I knew I was at the fork, and it's either I need relief and I need it really bad in every area of my life. I'm in trouble. And I only know two ways of relief because I am an alcoholic. There is not a third option. I either drink, which I proved to myself over about 7 years prior to that it does not work, or I recommit myself to Alcoholics Anonymous 110% because 100 is not going to do it anymore. I need to do everything I know to do here and then some. I need that cush because otherwise I'm going to start shaving that 100% down again. I need to do that just to stay equal to you. And I began to do that, and I began to take these steps again with my sponsor, and I began to, I made an amend that was the last amend on my original list. And I knew I felt so good about that, and it was such a freedom, and I didn't know it, but for about a year and a half, I'd lived sort of on a little pink cloud as a result of that. And I'm 8.5 years sober, and I've been a lot more active and working with people and much more active. But I'm 8.5 years sober, and I'm sitting in a meeting thinking, you know, why can't the enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous just always be there full on? And because I come to meetings on a regular basis, this is where I always get the solution. I can nest up in the problem very easily, but I really need to be reminded of the solution. And a guy was talking about the very same thing that night, being sober a period of time, feeling restless, irritable, and discontent. He said, I realized I'm trying to live today on last year's program. And that was the only thing I heard him say, because I was sort of patting myself on the back still from making that amend from a year and a half ago. He totally changed the way that I think about a day at a time. This is the day that I woke up this morning grateful to be alive again. But I got the opportunity to see another birthday, to participate in some people's lives throughout this day, to enjoy life and sobriety and make a contribution. This is the day that I have. My life, didn't go skipping down the a tulip path or anything like that as a result of coming to that understanding, but I've certainly had experiences, and I've had a lot of great highs in my life, and I've had a couple of pretty good sized bumps in the road for me. Not as serious as others. I was about 4 years ago now, we separated, and that was not a plan on my part, and it happened without my prior approval. And but what happened as a result of that is I got to look a lot about me and to find, my part in situations. And I know what it's like to be 16 and 17 years sober and feeling you are physically a zombie because of emotional pain. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be 16, 17 years sober and leaned up against a wall in your home and you're crying uncontrollably and your legs go rubbery on you and you slide down, and when you finally hit the bottom, you realize that's where you are, and you say you can do this for about another half hour, but then you've got to clean yourself up because you have to go greet at the meeting tonight. I don't get off for good behavior or bad behavior from commitments. I know what it's like to feel that you are literally on the edge of your sanity. And if somebody just goes
you're over at 16 and 17 years of sobriety. And I am not a flake in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am an active member here, and I am busy here, and I live this to the best of my ability, and yet things happen. Things will happen, but I stay sober through them because I have watched you go through bigger and carry bigger burdens than I will ever know, and you did it sober and with some dignity and grace. You've shown me how you do that. There aren't any badges or medals in Alcoholics Anonymous, not in the material sense that you can polish up every night and wear them and adorn them and say, well, this is when I took my inventory. And then, this one over here, I took a newcomer to a meeting 8 years ago. There aren't any of those kinds of badges and medals, but there are in Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw them 20 years ago in the eyes of the old-timers when I came here. They had a piece about them that I didn't know how you got. They stood still in their own skin. And I didn't know how you did that. And they had a God that was ever present for them. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to hopefully make a contribution in your meeting, but really to be able to participate in my own sobriety. Thank you.